Michigan's Jim Harbaugh. He's good with football games being played in empty stadiums, so we're going to get into this throughout the course of the morning or afternoon, I should say. I can assure you of that. Michigan coach Jim Harbaugh said he's comfortable playing games in empty stadiums as college football is trying to figure out what 2020 will look like. His quote, heck yeah, I'd be comfortable coaching a game without any fans. If the choice were to play in front of no fans or not play, then I would choose to play in front of no fans. Darn near every guy I've talked to on our team, that's the way they feel about it. Sure, the $7.5 million man, he's good playing games in front of no fans, but I'm not sure how the players actually feel about it. We'll find out. We'll dive into it. In the meantime, talking about public perception, the next headline you need to know, Tom Glavine speaking out. Former Atlanta Braves great Tom Glavine, a little bit of a warning to baseball players, talking about his concerns about the conversation being about salaries when they talk about the return of Major League Baseball, something we've talked about on this show quite a bit. He mentioned, as a point of reference, he was a players union representative during the baseball strike in 94-95, and he compared that situation to the current suspension of play in a story that was in the Atlanta Journal-Constitution. And his quote, if it were to come back to an economic issue, and that's the reason baseball didn't come back, you're looking at a situation similar to the strike of 94-95 as far as fans are concerned. Even if players were 100% justified in what they were complaining about, they're still going to look bad. That'll be interesting to see what it means moving forward. And lastly, some breaking news here. An unnamed NFL player is suing United Airlines, alleging he was sexually harassed, assaulted, and violated by a female passenger on a February flight from Los Angeles to Newark, New Jersey, and that the airline failed to properly respond to complaints. It's a civil suit that was filed in L.A. County Superior Court on Monday, seeks unspecified statutory and punitive damages from the airline. According to the lawsuit, the player and another passenger in the same row made 4 complaints to the flight attendant that the woman allegedly was making unwanted sexual advances before she was moved to a different seat. We'll see how that moves moving forward. It's First Take, your take on ESPN Radio, the ESPN app, Sirius XM Channel 80, and ESPN News. Again, we're presented by Progressive Insurance. I'm Jason Fitz. Asking you, this is more than a yes or no question. I want your thoughts on something. You just heard me talking about Jim Harbaugh. We've talked about Major League Baseball. There's a real college football conversation. What could it look like? What if we don't get every team back? What if only some teams come back? I've been talking to different radio stations across the country. We've been talking about the issue of competitive balance. And I want your thoughts on this. Should competitive balance matter when it comes to the return of sports? Do you care if some facilities might open up sooner than other facilities, for example, in the NFL? Do you care if some NBA teams might be able to train a little bit more than other NBA teams? Do you care if games are going to be moved to neutral sites or if we get less teams coming back in college football? I want your thoughts on competitive balance and how much it matters to you when it comes to the return of sports. 888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776. At Jason Fitz, you can also tweet me. I'm challenging you guys. This isn't as simple. We're not spoon-feeding you an answer. I want you guys to give me your take. Give me your thoughts on it. 888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776. We'll get your take. But first, we're going to start with some Straight Talk. Straight Talk Wireless doesn't play games. Get the unlimited plan. 25 gigs of high-speed data. Then 2G, it's only $45 a month. Saves you up to 50% against the big carriers. No contracts, no compromise. Savings may vary. See terms and conditions at StraightTalk.com. The Straight Talk was coming in the form of Horace Grant. Horace Grant seems angry. Let's just admit it. Coming off the last dance, Horace Grant is peeved. And he went on ESPN Chicago 1000, talked about, you know, some of his problems with Michael Jordan and some of the problems in his opinion. Once Michael Jordan has a grudge against you, he will do whatever he can to destroy you, essentially. That's part of the representation of what Horace has been saying. So Stephen A. and Max reacted to Horace Grant's comments about the last dance today on First Take.
Well, it's not really about MJ and Grant. It seems to be about a host of Chicago Bulls, a former Chicago Bulls, and MJ, because they resent the fact that the documentary was supposed to be about the 1997-98 Bulls when it's turned out to be essentially what we will term it as the Jordan documentary. We all know that, but there's a specific reason for that, and I think the players need to understand this. Nobody would give a damn about The Last Dance if Michael Jordan wasn't the guy that was speaking about it. If he wasn't a part of it, it would not have mattered. That is the reality of the situation. So, yes, it might not be a quote-unquote documentary series from a conventional perspective, but make no mistake about it, it is from Jordan's perspective, and Jordan's perspective is what matters to the mass majority of folks back out here. Horace Grant and others appear to have a problem with it based on what has been disseminated. Now let's break some of this stuff down. When you talk about Horace Grant's relationship with Michael Jordan. Of course, I spoke to Michael Jordan yesterday. He says he harbors no animosity, holds no grudge against Horace Grant, but clearly there were issues in the past. He pointed to 1993 season following the Olympics in Barcelona, the original Dream Team. When they came back from there, Phil Jackson usually had two-a-days. When they had, even though he usually had two-a-days, he said that Scottie Pippen and Michael Jordan only had to go through one-a-days because obviously they had participated in the Olympics in Barcelona. And Horace Grant had a problem with that, alluding to the fact that, you know what, there's different rules for different folks, there's double standards, and he didn't feel it was right. We saw on the docuseries where Will Perdue was highlighting how Horace Grant felt like he wasn't appreciated enough, and he had a problem with that. So there is some residue from that, which Michael Jordan acknowledged, because he said, as he said on the doc, as he said to me, you could see it on a docuseries when Will Perdue was talking about it, along with others. But he doesn't understand where this is coming from, and Michael Jordan's mentality is that he's been telling nothing but the truth from his perspective. If anybody's got a problem with it, so be it. But that's his truth. Now let me say this: we've got Craig Hodges on the record, all right, and we respect the hell out of Craig Hodges as black men. We appreciate what he stands for, but approaching Magic Johnson and Michael Jordan on the court before the 1991 finals to call for a boycott ain't exactly the wisest thing to do. That's number one. Number two, we got Scottie Pippen, who we love and revere and respect, one of the all-time greats. He hasn't received enough appreciation, but it was his quote that he said he wasn't going to F up his summer, okay, before the 1997-98 season, and that ended up him missing the first 35 games of that final season because he was a bit truculent towards the Chicago Bulls organization, who never appreciated him. Plus, he was on the record stating that the 1.8 seconds left, excuse me, I probably would have done it again, meaning not check back into the game. Almost 30 years later, he says, I probably would have done the same thing over again. So those are his words that are indicting him. And in the case of Horace Grant, I was not covering the NBA at that particular moment in time, Greeny and Max. But I will tell you, I started covering the NBA in 1996, all right, in an official capacity. And I was a beat writer for the Philadelphia 76ers from 1997 on. Here's the deal. Everybody in the media, you could ask Wilbon and everybody, we had all heard the same thing that Jordan said about Horace Grant with Sam Smith. We ain't casting any aspersions on Sam Smith, who's an exceptional NBA reporter for years. Sam Smith is great. He's never revealed his sources, nor should he. We don't know. But the belief was widely that it was Horace Grant as one of the people who were talking to him. So all of those things getting taken into consideration, we look at these Bulls, and the bottom line is there's Jordan and there's everybody else. And everybody else,
of course,
has a problem with Jordan, period.
Yeah, look, Michael Jordan is the greatest athlete of the 20th century. And if you ask me, when you talk about dominating the era, what the competition was like, the kind of sport it is, what kind of athletic ability it takes, etc., I don't think it's particularly close. I think there's Jordan, and then we can just start discussing the other athletes of the 20th century. So that's who Jordan is. Now, who's Horace Grant? A badly underrated player, as it turns out. He was a very good player. He was not good enough, obviously, to be the best player in a championship team or the second best player in a championship team. But he was clearly the third best player on a dynasty. That's damn good. He was a prototypical power forward plus for his era. What does that mean? Horace Grant had a good jump shot, mid-range, reliable. He obviously is a good rebounder on the offensive glass, but he was just a good rebounder. He was a good defender, a good post defender. He was a good passer. He did all the things you wanted a power forward to do. Oh, and by the way, he shot free throws just well enough, like high 60s, low 70s, and he blocked shots. Now, he was traded for Bill Cartwright. Charles Oakley was traded for Bill Cartwright. Oakley was Jordan's original prototypical power forward and protector and enforcer, and they were good friends. So I'm sure whoever came in to replace Oakley, even though Oakley was traded for Cartwright, Grant really replaced Oakley in terms of his function on the team, Jordan's going to have certain feelings about at least two start.
First Take, your take on ESPN Radio, the ESPN app. ESPN News presented by Progressive Insurance. I'm Jason Fitz. Don't forget, Navy Federal Credit Union has a mission to put members first by making their financial goals a priority Learn more at NavyFederal.org and join today. We're going to get your thoughts on all of that. And, of course, we're asking you guys about competitive balance. How much should it matter in the return of sports? But before we get more of your take, and you can call 888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776. Tell us what you think about competitive balance. Before we get there, I wanted to get on one of the, I think, the best guys we have in general in the sports community covering the NFL. Jim Trotter joins us now from the NFL Network. And, Jim, thanks for your time. First and foremost, I hope you and yours are safe and all is well for you, my friend. I wanted you to come on and join us because there's been so much conversation about the Rooney Rule and the proposal for the Rooney Rule. So it hit people a little out of left field when the first proposal was made that weren't following the entire process. How surprised were you by the proposal that it was even made in the first place?
Oh, I was surprised. I think like everyone else, when you talk about incentivizing the hiring of minorities, it's going to raise an eyebrow, get your attention. So I was surprised by that. But before we even get into all of that, can we clear up one thing? People are conflating the Rooney Rule with these resolutions that the NFL discussed yesterday. The Rooney Rule is separate from that. The Rooney Rule is something that can be imposed by the league office. It does not require a vote of owners. So therefore, the fact that they've now enhanced the Rooney Rule, where two minorities, at least a minimum of two minorities, must be interviewed for a head coach or GM position, and the fact that they're now going to apply that to the coordinator position, that is separate from those resolutions. So, and that was instituted by the league office. To your point about the resolution about incentivizing the hiring of minority coaches and GMs, yeah, it definitely caught me off guard, and many of the minority coaches I've talked to, it caught them off guard as well.
Well, and to that end, we talked to Dominique Foxworth yesterday about this, who's covered this quite a bit as well, and he was sort of conflicted at first about wanting that sort of an opportunity if it's under those guidelines, and then he changed his position on it. When you talk to coaches that look at this opportunity, should there come some sort of incentivized opportunity, is there a drawback to it for a prospective coach?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, when you talk to these either current head coaches, minority head coaches, or aspiring coaches, minority coaches who aspire to be head coaches, they absolutely, many of them, the vast majority of them that I spoke to, feel like that this resolution, had it passed, would have unfairly tainted them and limited their authority within the organization and within the locker room, and that they feel they would have been judged with people believing the narrative would have been that they got their job simply because of the color of their skin rather than their qualifications. But I will say this to you, too. Yesterday I spoke to one former NFL head coach who happens to be black and asked him about this whole proposal. And what he said to me is that, look, you can either get your foot in the door and prove yourself that way or not have an opportunity at all to get your foot in the door. He said, I would much rather prefer to get my foot in the door. As much as I may not like the proposal, the resolution, if it helps get us in the door where we can improve ourselves and hopefully provide opportunities for other men of color, he said, I'll take that. So there's a different opinion on both sides on it, but the vast majority initially were saying this is not a good proposal, we're not for it, and it negatively impacts us. And in fact, some said, they used the word, it's an insult to them personally if this were to be voted in.
We're talking to NFL Network reporter Jim Trotter on First Take, Your Take, ESPN Radio. I'm Jason Fitz. And Jim, you tweeted out that we have the lowest number of minority coaches and GMs that we've had in 17 years. So why is this still an issue? Head coaches, sorry. Why is this still an issue?
It's a great question. And I've said this before. I believe it all goes back to ownership. People keep focusing on the league. Well, the league office wants this addressed. The league office is uncomfortable with these numbers. The league office believes this is not good business. That's why you have seen the league office takes every step that it can or feels it can to address this issue, whether it's enhancing the Rooney Rule, whether it's creating fellowships now where all 32 teams are going to have a minority fellow who will be in the quarterback room to try and increase the numbers there. When you start talking about summits that the league has in the offseason for minority coaches to network and gain empowerment through conversation to try and address these issues. The league has done all of that, so it is now at a point where it comes back to owners. Owners make the hires, owners do the firing. And what we have seen in recent years is that owners do a much better job of firing than they do hiring, especially when you are averaging a turnover rate of nearly 7 per year since 2000. That tells you what the problem is. And I'll go back to this based on a conversation I had with Tony Dungy last year when I was putting together a story on this. And the fundamental issue here is owners do not know how to hire head coaches. They hire these search firms to help them go out and find coaches. And the reality is what these search firms often do is they go interview football people and say, who should we be talking to? Who are the hot candidates? Those sorts of things. Well, in my opinion, an owner should be doing that homework himself, not relying on a search firm, because that will give him a better understanding of who it is that he is considering to hire. The other thing here is owners make a mistake at the start of every hiring cycle, because what happens? The minute that cycle begins, what do people say? Who are the hot candidates? Well, the one thing an owner should be doing before he ever even gets to any name, you know, in terms of candidates, is say, what am I looking for in a head coach? Do I want someone with head coaching experience, or do I want someone fresh? Do I want someone young or someone old? Do I want someone who is hands-on, or do I want someone who's a delegator? Do I want someone from the offensive side of the ball, the defensive side, or special teams? If you haven't answered questions like that before you start considering candidates, the likelihood is that you are going to fail in that hire. And that's what many of these owners don't address, in my opinion, before they go out and start looking for head coaches. All they say is, I want someone good, without having a clear understanding or idea of exactly what it is they are looking for in a head coach and what they believe makes a head coach successful.
NFL reporter Jim Trotter joining us. And Jim, that's such a great point, because I think the most helpless feeling as a fan is when you know that your owner just isn't good at hiring people. I mean, that's its own skill, being able to recognize talent that you think can actually run a football team. So there isn't like a guidebook that helps owners get better at running that portion of their business. Now, that being said, it was obviously the proposal that we're talking about was tabled yesterday, and Amy Trask on Twitter pointed out that typically happens because there aren't enough votes to get something passed right now. So what's the future now for what we've been talking about?
Oh, I think that they'll continue to discuss it. They'll seek ways to tweak it, make it better, stronger, more palatable for the owners. I know I had talked to owners prior to the vote who told me they just didn't feel that, as constituted, it was worth voting in favor of. And one told me he had talked to a handful of his colleagues, and they just felt this wasn't the right time for this. Besides the issue of anytime you bring up race in any endeavor, it's going to be controversial. But they said, look, we're in the middle of a pandemic. We don't know if we're going to have a season. We don't know what a season would look like if we do have one. People are losing their jobs. People are being furloughed. So why are we addressing this right now? Let's get through this more pressing issue before we address this. And so I had a pretty good sense or belief that going into that vote that it would be tabled, because the one thing that the league does, as Amy said, is if it is not going to pass and it is something that the league wants, they will table it. And believe this, I was told by owners, the league was pushing very hard to have this proposal passed. And so the fact that it wasn't tells you that more work needs to be done on it.
Do you believe the owners think that there's an issue?
I would hope so. But here's my fear, and this is a personal opinion. One thing that the NFL always talks about before making changes, what are the unintended consequences? And when it comes to owners, when you're talking about billionaire men and women, when you push them into a corner and tell them they have to do something, or you pressure them to do something, there is often a reverse action where they say, you know what? I'm not doing it just because you're telling me I have to do it. And I hope that is not the case here. I hope that owners understand why this is such an important issue. I went and did some research about looking for flashpoints in NFL history where something like this radical was proposed. And it basically started in the modern era for me in 87 with Bill Walsh with the 49ers, who decided at that point he was looking out at the landscape and he saw that minority coaches, assistant coaches in college were having trouble jumping to the NFL, that the door was being slammed in their face. And so Bill at that point had two Super Bowls on his resume, and he would later get a third. So he had the clout to go out and basically challenge NFL culture. And what he did is he said, you know what? I'm going to have a summer internship program where I bring in minority coaches from college and high school, and I bring in former athletes, and I have them spend the entire summer with us in training camp. And that program was so impactful that the league ultimately adopted it, named it the Bill Walsh NFL Diversity Coaching Fellowship. And in the first 14 years of that program, the NFL hired five African-American head coaches. To that point, they had never had one in the modern era. They hired five within the first 14 years. And subsequent to that, you've had people like Mike Tomlin, Marvin Lewis, Herm Edwards, Raheem Morris, Hugh Jackson, Anthony Lynn, who were either on Bill's staff or went through that program, who have been hired as head coaches, African-Americans who have been hired as head coaches. So that had an impact. And then the numbers of head coaches, minority head coaches, started to fall back. And so in 2003, they instituted the Rooney Rule. And again, we saw an incremental increase in the number of minority head coaches. And now all of a sudden, it's going back the wrong way again. And so the league again tried to do something radical yesterday. And that resolution was tabled, as we said. But I just believe that the league is so frustrated right now that it has been unable to make any headway on this issue that it was willing to try something drastic at this point.
You guys can follow him on Twitter at JimTrotter_NFL. Nobody does it better. Jim, I really appreciate your time. Thanks so much for hanging out with us.
No, buddy. Thanks for having me.
Jim Trotter, just doing great work on this and on everything NFL related. Make sure you give him a follow and he'll keep everybody updated on it too. Great read. If you go up and down his Twitter handle, you can find a lot of information on this. In the meantime, we've been asking you guys, should competitive balance matter in sports returning? You can get your take in 888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776. We'll get some of your take coming up next. You can also tweet me at Jason Fitz. We'll do that. Plus, Brady held an informal workout first take. Had the debate, is he a legit MVP candidate? You'll hear what they had to say about that next.
Geico knows there are many reasons why you ride. From the camaraderie of the other bikers, a band of brothers, always there for you, rain or shine, to the amazing savings you get with Geico on your motorcycle insurance and accessories coverage all year round. But for Bucky Hornhill, it was one reason in particular.
It was my helmet hair. I was born with helmet hair. I've tried to cut it a bunch of times, even buzzing it, but it immediately just goes back to helmet hair.
Geico Motorcycle. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more.
It could be a routine drive to pick up the kids after school or an epic road trip across the country. No matter where your travels take you, we know those miles count. We're Marathon. We have over 5,700 stations across our great nation. Our people are working hard every day to provide you with quality top-tier gasoline to improve engine performance and fuel your life. Marathon, fueling the American spirit.
First Take, your take on ESPN Radio, the ESPN app, Sirius XM Channel 80, and of course, ESPN News. We're presented by Progressive Insurance. Don't forget, tune in to the ESPN Daily Podcast. Get you a deep dive into a single story from one of ESPN's hundreds of reporters, presented by Marathon. Download, subscribe, review ESPN Daily, available wherever you enjoy your podcast. I'm Jason Fitz. We're asking you, should competitive balance matter when it comes to the return of sports? 888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776. I want to give you a little context on why we're asking this. We were just talking about, if you were watching on ESPN News, conversation about the possibility that football could return with no fans in the stands. What if we only get a few college football teams, not all of the college football teams? What if some NBA facilities can open up before others? What if we have to look at neutral site games? We have all of these different things that could affect competitive balance. So the question is, do you care? Are we so thirsty for sports in a year where we're going to get an asterisk anyway around whoever wins a championship that we don't care about it? David in Florida, what's your thought on competitive balance and sports returning?
I think instead of having seasons like, you know, I'm an IU basketball fan, so instead of having them compete for a Big Ten championship or compete for a national championship, it'd be a good opportunity to reinvigorate maybe the Indiana-Kentucky rivalry and set that up with a couple of other teams like we do in the preseason with the preseason NIT, and they can compete for trophies of tournaments. It gets the players out there to play, the fans something to watch, it helps recruiting. It helps recruiters see players, you know, maybe from the NBA for down the line. But it also doesn't create national championships with asterisks. And on the football side, college football, something similar to soccer where they have friendlies. Who wouldn't want to see Michigan and Ohio State play each other or Alabama and Georgia if other teams aren't able to play? Those would still generate interest, but we're not playing for national championships.
You know, actually, I don't hate the idea. I believe that, honestly, the world is going to be constantly looking for championships and everything. Like, we want to find a winner and a loser on a Chopped show. Like, I can't watch food TV without getting a winner and a loser. I was watching, like, the worst cooks in America, and they go through these challenges at the beginning, and there's a winner and a loser, but there's no prize. So I'm like, why are they even doing this? So I do wonder if we are so thirsty for some sort of title that we wouldn't accept that. But I do think you present a great idea where you could have these be sort of friendly matches, whether it's football, basketball, any of the sports, and you could use it as a moment to bring everybody together and distract everybody. 888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776. Do you care about competitive balance when sports return? I know a couple of you guys are hanging on. We'll get your take in just a second. But first, Tom Brady has been working out with the supporting cast. So the question is, what's more important? Is it Brady, or is it the cast of characters that surround Tom? Stephen A. and Max broke that down today.
The answer is the supporting cast. This supporting cast won 7 games last year with a quarterback who threw 30 interceptions totaling 112 points, gave the other team 112 points, still was one game away from a 500 record because they had a hell of a supporting cast, an underrated defense and a really good offense. And since then, they've added to that offense before you even get to the quarterback in Gronkowski. When you look at how many good tight ends they have, how many receivers they have, they drafted a guy who a lot of people on this show, Molly, said he was going to be the first offensive lineman taken. They thought to the Giants. They think a top 5 pick. In Wirfs, the Bucks get him. Like, the Bucks are loaded. They're loaded. And when you look at what Tom Brady actually means, is he giving people the feeling that in the moment of truth he can be clutch? Sure, he's giving you that feeling, but mostly what we're dealing with here is he's not going to hand the ball to the other team. He's going to make sound decisions and steady the ship. Just by doing that, just by replacing Jameis Winston with a solid middle-of-the-pack quarterback and then adding offensive talent, you wouldn't expect 7-9. You'd expect 9-7, depending on the quarterback, maybe 10-6, and that's what I think we're dealing with here. Let's not forget, Brady, without the supporting cast, did not win a playoff game last year. But he also didn't beat the Miami Dolphins, a win they really needed to have to get home field. He lost a must-win game at the end of the season, really, for the playoffs, and then lost the first game of the playoffs. Now, you could say, well, they had 12 wins. They're a really good team. Yes, Bill Belichick is a genius coach, and Brady still has enough in the tank to be his muse, right, to do most of the things Belichick wanted him to do, although when the time came, Belichick said, okay, see you later. So who's more important, Brady on the one hand at this age or his entire supporting cast with the Bucks on the other? Pretty clearly, this is the entire supporting cast.
I think it's pretty clearly Tom Brady. And I think the evidence is in the fact that Jameis Winston is gone. If it was really just about the supporting cast, why would Jameis Winston have needed to be replaced? Why? Because there's somebody throwing them the damn football. That's why, no matter how good you think they are, no matter how good I think they are, if you don't have the right person throwing them the football instead of throwing it to the other team, giving new meaning to 30 for 30, the bottom line is Tom Brady wouldn't be necessary. But he is, because you don't have to worry about that with him at the quarterback position. We understand that you added Rob Gronkowski to the mix. Would Rob Gronkowski be needed if Tom Brady wasn't there? It's the relationship, the chemistry, the camaraderie that they have with one another, and being the champions that they were together that makes Rob Gronkowski so much so important. He was gone. He hasn't played since 2018. He just turned 31 years of age. I believe it was May 14th. Happy belated birthday to him. But the bottom line is that you're expecting him to be a reliable target for Tom Brady, primarily in short yardage situations, even in pressurized situations. But when you look at Howard and Brate and Evans and Godwin, they've got a multitude of weapons there. We all know that. We concede that. But in the end, they still were not winning football games. And they weren't winning football games because they didn't have the right man throwing them the damn football. Period. It all changes now. There's expectations, and they are championship expectations. The Bucks are actually considered a Super Bowl contender. Now, let's take that into perspective here. Wipe Tom Brady out of the picture for a second, Molly and Max. You've added a rookie offensive lineman, and you've added Gronkowski. And suddenly you're a Super Bowl contender? Of course not. you're a Super Bowl contender because Tom Brady has arrived with the weapons you have, no doubt. Tom Brady is the guy that's expected to utilize those weapons. He is the pivotal piece in all of this. Without him, it don't matter. We wouldn't even be thinking about the Bucs going to the playoffs if Tom Brady wasn't there.
Ooh, that's a hot take by Stephen A. at the end, given the number of weapons they have there. Do we really not believe that the Bucs would even be in the playoff conversation were it not for Tom Brady? Or were it not for the weapons that are around? I mean, do we believe that they couldn't have put anyone at that quarterback position other than Jameis Winston, given the fact that, you know, they've made it clear, Bruce Arians made it clear he could win with, if he could win with Jameis, he could win with anybody. Do we really believe that nobody could come in and make the Bucs a playoff team? I don't know if I'm willing to say that. And frankly, if Tom Brady went to a team that had no weapons, if Tom Brady went to a different team not named New England and it just happened to be a team that stinks, do we think that Brady suddenly, if he's with the Jags, is lifting the Jags to the playoffs? I mean, I know this is not a popular answer on debates, but there's a bit of both to this. But if we're going to look at the bit of both to all of it, I mean, it's clear if we're talking about the Buccaneers as a Super Bowl caliber player, that has to come down to the person that's distributing the football, because that would be the biggest difference last year. So it comes down to Brady. First Take, your take. We're asking for your take on competitive sports, competitive balance mattering when sports return. Tristan in Pittsburgh. Tristan, what do you got? What's your thought on competitive balance?
So, Jason, I think anybody that's worried about competitive balance is trying to apply fairness into a situation by nature that is completely unfair. COVID-19 does not care where you are, doesn't care when sports start, doesn't care about any of that. And so, honestly, if we really think about this, the entire year of 2020 has a big asterisk on it anyway. So why are we going to try to apply fairness to sports when we already know that we're going to look back on this and look back on this in history and not see it the same way as we see any other season anyway? So we should allow teams.
Tristan, what's your favorite football team?
Pittsburgh Steelers.
Right. That's what I thought. Okay. So if the Steelers go in and the Steelers, because of whatever, let's just say that the way the rules are working out, it looks like the Steelers don't get to their facility until right before the regular season for whatever reason. But then conversely, the Browns and the Ravens get in normal camp time. You don't think that there'd be some complaints within the Steelers fan base about a lack of competitive balance for that?
Oh, trust me. I know Steelers fans and they will definitely complain about it. But here's the fact that it's unrealistic to complain about anything that happens this season because of what is happening right now is so much bigger than sports. We're dealing with a global pandemic right now. And for us to complain about not getting to the facility before the Browns would be completely ridiculous. I would just be happy to have sports, period.
All right, that is real, Tristan. I love the passion, too, that gets in there at the end, right? Like, let's face it, through it all, the fan bases that are going to complain are the fan bases that don't win as much as they want to or don't, you know, that believe there's already a conspiracy against their team, which is most fan bases, I understand it. But I want to get your thoughts on competitive balance, especially I'll call out college football fans, 888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776. I think this argument is going to be bigger to college football fans than anybody because we are going to realize at some point that certain schools, not just conferences, not just states, certain schools are going to open up at different times. So are you okay in a college football world where suddenly you're an Ohio State fan and you realize that Bama got at it earlier than you did? Are you good with that? 888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776. Should competitive balance matter in the return of sports? ESPN Radio, presented by Progressive Insurance. This is Shower Sessions, half interview, half concert. Every time this stumbles me up because it's just kind of a weird thought. Shower Sessions, half interview, half concert, all from the shower. Watch new music videos and exclusive interviews now at youtube.com/progressive. I got asked to do the Disney music sing-along, but not the shower sing-along. I'm a little bummed by that. I wanted to show off my Sinatra. Okay, we'll keep taking your take on competitive balance and whether or not it matters in the return of sports. Plus, Harbaugh had some interesting thoughts on college football this season that I have a real issue with. You'll hear him next. First Take, your take on ESPN Radio.
Geico gets you access to licensed agents 24/7, which means that Geico is always there for you. If only everyone was always there for you. Like your mom, when you fill out really, really important paperwork on the first day of a new job.
Name, check. Birthday, social security, is that a thing? Hey, mom, what is my social security number? Mom? Okay, let's guess. 0017. Oh, Gemini. Hashtag done.
Geico, always there for you with savings and 24/7 access to licensed agents.
Foot odor throwing you off your game? Stick to a winning game plan with Odor Eaters, featuring three advanced odor and wetness fighters. The lineup provides long-lasting odor control plus more to keep your feet on their game.
Odor Eaters powder provides outstanding moisture control. Clear drying spray is the MVP in preventing athlete's foot, while insoles work continuously to manage wetness while adding a layer of comfort. Pick up today at Walmart, Target, CVS, Dollar General, or other fine retailers.
Odor Eaters. Destroy foot odor with the best in odor defense.
First Take, your take on ESPN Radio, the ESPN app, SiriusXM, Channel 80, and ESPN News. We're presented by Progressive Insurance. If you missed the first hour of today's show, go check it out. It's on demand. First Take, your take podcast brought to you by Capital One. Why settle for average with Capital One? You can open a savings account with the rate five times the national average. Welcome to banking reimagined. What's in your wallet? Capital One, N.A. member FDIC. Now, this is First Take, your take, which means we react to some of what First Take had to say. I react to it, and you react to it. The last First Take segment was a conversation about who was more important. Is it Tom Brady or is it the supporting cast? And Robert in Vegas wants to chime in on that. We'll let that happen. Robert, what do you got? What's your take on it?
Well, yeah. So as a guy that had Mike Evans on his fantasy squad, like, I just think most of those stats are empty calories, and I don't think that they deserve that much credit. Like, Jameis Winston threw more touchdowns than Russell Wilson. It's empty calorie stats. And I also had Gronk on my fantasy. Can't stay healthy. He didn't contribute much. So I just think they're just not stacked or loaded the way Max Kellerman said at all.
Well, here's the only disagreement I would say with you. Yes, maybe they're empty stats. But for all the good that Jameis Winston did, and I think I've been waving that flag more than anybody, the Bucs went 7-9 with the turnover machine at quarterback. So they weren't empty stats. They were part of the stats that kept them in the game. They went 7-9. Now they get somebody that's going to limit the mistakes. Even if all they do is put up the same, as you said, empty stats, that's still going to be enough to elevate them to a playoff level performance. So in that sense, Brady matters more because all he's doing is cutting down on the mistakes. Although I do think asking Brady to throw for 5,000 yards is a lot. All right, so Jim Harbaugh joined Get Up this morning, had plenty to say about the pandemic and particularly about the possibility of playing with no fans in the stands. I want you to check it out.
Virtual workouts, virtual meetings, staying in touch by phones. That's how we've been doing it, and we'll see. Hopefully you can get the guys back together, get them working out as soon as the gyms open up. You feel like you can get them back into the facility, at least on a voluntary basis, and I sure do miss them, I can tell you that. You could definitely test both teams. You could test the officials and everybody. Can you test 100,000 fans coming into a stadium? Probably not. Without a vaccine, you probably couldn't do that. So, yeah, to answer your question, heck yeah, I'd be comfortable coaching a game without any fans. If the choice were play or in front of no fans or not play, I would choose play in front of no fans. And I think most of darn near every guy I've talked to on our team, that's the way they feel about it. The proposal really is you can be drafted before your completion of your junior year in college. But it's got another piece to it, too, which is that if you don't get drafted, then you can still come back to college football with eligibility and play. The third part of it is once a player finishes his pro career, then he can come back to college as a student and finish up his degree at the expense of the university. So putting the players in a position where they can have a shot at a college career, they can have their shot at a pro career if they're good enough. And ultimately, and the most important thing is that they're going to get their degree either way.
First Take, your take on ESPN Radio. There's a lot to break down. Obviously, as he broke down how the team is communicating right now, which is great. And he talked about his NFL draft proposal, which we've already talked about has some holes in it. And the very theory of being able to go out to the draft and then come back because you don't like your draft status asks where you're going to go. Is somebody going to leave scholarships open for you, or are you just going to trickle back down? I mean, how's that going to work? Who's going to be affected by it? Who's going to lose their scholarship? There's a million parts of it. But the part I have the biggest hard time with is his concept as he comes in and says, look, if I have the choice between coaching a game with no fans in the stands or no games at all, I'll take no fans. Of course you will. You know, and he says, darn near everybody I've talked to on the team is on the same page. Well, of course they are. What else are they going to say? I mean, do you really think that a player at Michigan is going to turn around and say, well, coach, my mom and I aren't really sure that that's safe for us? If schools aren't open, this is simple. Just because you know somebody's name on Saturday doesn't mean that they should be treated differently than any other person that goes to that college. If schools aren't open, games shouldn't be played. If schools are open, then they should hold athletes to the same standard that they hold every other student to, because ultimately, schools have two absolute requirements. One, they must educate the kids that come on that campus. Two, they must protect the kids that come on that campus. They must make it a safe environment. I don't give a damn if you play football or if you play a flute. You're entitled to the same protection when you walk on that campus. It's easy for somebody making $7.5 million a year to tell everybody what he's comfortable with, but nobody's protecting these kids. They have no union and nobody can speak for them. So I'm not going to hold them to a different stand. Coming up next, we'll hear Horace Grant's strong comments about The Last Dance. You don't want to miss that. That's First Take Your Take on ESPN Radio, ESPN News.